Hey guys, and welcome to Money Talks News, the podcast. In this episode, we're talking about how to pick winning stocks. If you're an avid investor, or even if you're not, at one time or another, you've probably considered investing in individual stocks. I've been doing this for 40 years, and over that time, I've made well over $1 million investing in the stocks of individual companies. But stock picking isn't for everyone, and it does come with risk. Even the best stock pickers periodically lose money. The trick is to learn a few rules that will increase your odds of success. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about today. I'm Stacy Johnson. As usual, my co-host will be financial journalist Miranda Marquette. Hello, Miranda.
Hey, Stacy. This is kind of a fun one for me because, as we know, like, I don't do a lot of individual stocks, but the ones I have done really well. So.
Oh, I actually thought you did none. I'm be interested to see which ones you bought. This week, we've got a guest friend of the show, Kevin Matthews, former investment advisor and author of Starting Point, How to Create Wealth That Lasts. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm really excited about this because I love stocks. And I rarely get to talk about them on the podcast because I have so many wimps like Miranda, who's a mutual fund buyer. But anyway,
Life's so hard, Stacy. I know. It's a tough life you've got going on here.
I always give a disclaimer before we begin these podcasts, folks, but today I really want you to listen to this. I want you to pay attention. We may be talking about individual companies today. In fact, I'm sure we will be, but that does not make them recommendations. This is not investment advice. Never, ever invest in anything without doing your own research and or consulting your own experts. And now, hopefully that'll keep me from being sued. Let's dive in. Kevin, are you a buyer of individual stocks?
Yes, I am.
Have you done well in it? How long have you been doing it? You're 33 years old. How long have you been doing it?
Yeah, I've been doing it close to 11 or 12 years now.
Wow. You started early.
Yeah. As soon as I can get my hands on a stock, I did. So I actually started my very first stock was from a finance professor. This was 2009 or 2010, I think. So actually a little longer. It was right after the Great Recession. And he was like, hey, go buy the banks. So I bought $300 of Citi stock. It did not go well, but I learned my lesson. And that kind of, I guess, started my origin story, if you will.
Well, I bought a whole bunch of bank stocks in March of 2009. I bought J.P. Morgan that I remember off the top of my head at $25, and it's now $150. So I did well buying banks during the Great Recession. Okay, now, Miranda, we know you mentioned in the intro that you do buy stocks and you've done really well. Tell me about what you've bought.
Yeah, so occasionally I'll buy something because it looks interesting, or, you know, the one that I like to use as a good example is back in the day. So like back in 2020, like back in April of 2020, one of my clients asked me to do a stock analysis for an investment newsletter they were putting out. And they wanted me to analyze the market for hard seltzer. And this is like just when things were starting to close down, and they wanted to know, what's a recommendation that you would make for buying a stock with hard seltzer. And after making this market analysis, so I did this market analysis on hard seltzer. Of course, White Claw is number one, but you can't buy it. It's a private Canadian company. But number two at the time in the market was Truly, which is owned by the Boston Beer Company, which makes Sam Adams, ticker symbol SAM. And so I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to recommend, if you're interested in a hard seltzer, if you want to see something do well, I'm going to recommend this. And I was a little nervous because I don't make a lot of stock recommendations, but we did. I put it in the newsletter. I recommended this stock. And at the time I recommended it, it was trading at right around $350 a share, like somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
But that was my recommendation for a, hard seltzer play. So by the time we get to September 2020, it's pushing $900. It's pushing
wow.
$900 a share. By the time we get to the end of the year, by the time we get to, November, October, November, it's pushing $1,000 a share.
Year is this?
2020.
Okay.
So this is 2020. And so it peaked at about $1,300 a share sometime early 2021, like April-ish. And so, but because in general, when I buy when I buy stocks, individual stocks, I use kind of my fun money, my play money, my experimentation money. And so once I get to a certain point where I'm basically like doubling my money or more, I'm like, okay, it's time to sell. And so once I hit that year mark, you know, so I've got the long-term capital gains, right? Because I didn't want to sell short-term capital gains. I sold, you know, in March-ish, and ended up selling for right around $1,100 a share.
Awesome.
That I'd bought at $300, $350.
And now you've round tripped too, because right. I'm looking at it right now. Boston Beer Company is $303.
Yeah, so now it's down. It's definitely dropped from the peak because it was a huge deal during the pandemic, right? The thing with the hard seltzer market was they expected it to go up when people were like, I gotta buy alcohol. We're doing outdoor things. We could sit around outdoors and drink alcohol during the pandemic. And so so I unloaded all of that after I hit that year mark and could do long-term capital gains. And so I don't have any of it left today. But it was just,
well, good
it's
for
just,
you.
Yeah, because part of what I do when I buy individual stocks is I do so with a plan to sell after I've made X amount of dollars or after I've held it for X amount of time, rather than doing a long-term value play, which I'm sure Kevin will talk to us about, looking at a long-term value play.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I've got a lot of questions on the way you did that. I mean, obviously you're successful, but right. Rather than ask you those questions and keep talking about the same stock, let's bring Kevin into the conversation. Kevin, I see a note here from Miranda on my script. Why do we think of choosing individual stocks as real investing? And that's true, because I just kind of made fun of Miranda for investing in mutual funds. You know, I feel like I'm the gunslinger here, you know, because I've got all these stocks. Why is buying individual stocks important, or is it?
It's not important. And I say that because it's not required at all. You don't have to do it. But I think people do it and want to do it and have this itch to at least look at it is because it feels more tangible. When you're investing in a mutual fund, it just kind of feels like this thing. You can't hold it. You can't see it. You can't touch it. But with the stock, I can at least say, hey, look, I own Apple and I have an iPhone in my hand and I'm watching Netflix and I feel like a true participant because the longer I'm on this phone, the more content I watch, Netflix is getting paid, therefore I'm getting paid. So I think that's the perception of it. There's risk and rewards on either side of that. You can obviously do both like I do. But I think that's the reason why people gravitate more towards stocks or why they feel like they have to, but it's not at all required.
That's my follow-up question then. Is it required? And I mean, who should be buying stocks or should any? I mean, I think most people in the financial advice business, that is, financial journalists like Miranda or me, we often suggest just put some money into a mutual fund, keep adding to it every month, you know, like a 401k type thing, right? Because you can't buy individual stocks in a 401k anyway. But you're going like, you know, don't try to find the winner. Just buy the whole market. It's gone up an average of 10% per year over the last 100 years, blah, blah, blah. What's wrong with that advice? Or should people do both? And how would you decide?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that advice. I think where you get careful or where people can get skittish or where people make mistakes is how far away do you drift from that advice? So, for example, I make sure for me, I don't have more than 15% in individual stocks of all my portfolio. That's as far as I go because it is more risky. Now, you've got some people that just throw it all out the window and just 100% stocks and just pick whatever. Right. That can be dangerous. It can also be worth it depending on what you invest in. So it's really about how far away do you stray from that? And what are those guardrails? Like in case you are wrong, is what I talk about all the time. What is that quote unquote insurance policy? For me, I've got my index funds. And if I'm wrong, 85% of my money is there. I'm going to be okay if I happen to choose the wrong stock.
And you know, that's almost precisely, Kevin, coincidentally, what I advise people now. I used to say all mutual funds all the time, because it takes a lot of more effort to invest in individual stocks. And as you point out, also risky. But you know what I say now? I say 90% in mutual funds, 10% swing for the fence, you know, finds, you know, because it can change your life. And I know Miranda and Aaron have heard me say this so many times, I'm sure it's going to make them nauseous. But I put $1,500 into Apple 20 years ago, and I've made more than $1 million on it. And to be able to swing for the fence, and that doesn't mean gamble. You know, the reason I bought apples, because my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, was carrying around, she wanted a, iPod, right? Mm-hmm. And I was too tight to buy one myself. I bought her one as a gift because they cost like $300, if I recall. But instead, I bought the stock. Same thing with Facebook. I just bought some more of that not long ago. I don't have a bunch, maybe 200 shares. But anyway, the reason I bought it is because her butt's not in a seat before she's checking in at a restaurant. I mean, she's on there all the time. She pretends like she's paying attention to me, but she's not. She's looking at her damn phone. And so I thought, if everybody's obsessed with this thing, maybe I should buy it. I'm still not on Facebook very much, but I made a ton of money in the stock. So this is how I pick a stock. You know, I see what's going on out there. What are people doing? And then looking at that company and then trying to get more information. But by the way, I was also lucky. I don't want to sound like I'm smart, but when I bought Apple, I bought it because of iPods. Well, then all of a sudden the iPhone came along. That changed everything. You know, so that was luck. I didn't know that was going to happen, obviously. I couldn't see the future. So, but, you know, and also I'm going to talk about stocks that I've made money in, but I've also lost money in stocks too, and I'll make that very clear. But, you know, one of the things, I'm trying to remember the guy's name who used to run Fidelity, and he's written books. Peter Lynch. He wrote a book, he's written several books on how to invest. And one of the things he said was, remember that when you're a batter in baseball, if you get 40%, if you hit 40% of the time, you're a star. You're a big star. And the same thing in the stock market. You're going to be wrong. But when you're right, if you let those profits run, that's how you change everything. Like I bought NVIDIA during the COVID 2021. Same. When was that? Mm-hmm. 2021?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did an NVIDIA run.
Yeah. What did you do? Do you still have it?
I sold off enough to have doubled my money, and then I've got a little bit left because
I put 10 grand in it in 2021. It's worth 80 right now, 80,000.
Yeah. So when I put some in, back I think I went late 2020. So when it was at about 138, and then when it hit, you know, it was hitting, somewhere around 300 or so, I went ahead and sold, about 75% of it, but I have enough left that, you know, it's doing great because, you know, it's above 450 right now. So like I saved some of it, but I just kind of have these rules where I'm just like, okay, when I double my money, when I can take profits enough that I've doubled the money I've put in, I'm going to take some profits. And that's kind of my rule is like
nothing wrong
profits.
With that. Shoot. But I would also say, I mean, obviously there's nothing wrong with success, period. But I would also say though, that because you're only going to be right a certain percentage of the time, that you've got to let your profits run and cut your losses short. And by the way, I was a stockbroker for 10 years. And I'll tell you, this is the opposite of what people do. Because they say, you can't go broke taking a profit. So they'll take a profit of $300. And then and then when something goes against them, when their stock starts going down, they'll go, well, when it comes back to where I paid for it, then I'll sell it. And then they ride it all the way down to nothing, you know?
Yeah, and I think so part of what I do, because I am, to a lot of extent, very risk averse with my investments, is part of the reason why I take profits when I reach a certain point is, like, I still have some NVIDIA, so there's still some upside for me to capture. It's still going to happen. Like, I'm still making money. Like, I can still make money from it. But I've already made the profit. I've already locked in profits. And so if it does ride down to zero, I've already made money off of it. And I've already doubled my money in it. And so I don't feel as bad if it goes to zero. And I'm perfectly happy if I can capture more profits down the road.
Well, there were many, many times when I would have been advised to sell Apple over 20 years. You know, you watch CNBC and you're getting so much information all the time. And you know what's even worse when you're a stockbroker? I mean, you sit there all day staring at the stock market and it makes you pull the trigger too soon. But if I had listened to advice, I wouldn't have made, you know, have whatever percent that is, 10,000% on my Apple investment. You know, I just remembered something. We have a guest.
What? Are you serious?
Kevin's on the show. I forgot all about it. You know what? Let me take a quick break, and then Moran and I will continue to fritter away this whole podcast. We'll be right back after this. Okay, we're back. Before we start again, though, if you like what we do, do something for us and share this show with your friends and family on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe to our podcast. It takes you 2 seconds, but we really would appreciate it. Okay, now let's reintroduce our guest who's supposed to be telling us how to pick stocks. Kevin, what have you thought about all this stuff? What rules do you have when you're approaching stocks?
Yeah, so one thing you had mentioned was letting your profits run long and cutting your losers short. That is almost word for word what my process is. So I have two standing dates on my calendar when I come back and reevaluate my portfolio. It's June and December every year. I come back and say, hey, look, who are the losers? We will cut those short, and which ones are winners, and we'll continue holding on to those. So that's a big part of my investing process that's helped me to be quite successful. And making sure that, like Miranda, I take some of those earnings. If I've won, like I picked up NVIDIA in 2020, it was up more than 350% for me. I sold a third of it and said, all right, let's take some of these gains and let's invest them in other areas to kind of diversify my portfolio.
That makes sense. Wimp. At least you only sold a third of it. I was tempted to sell it when things went south because I think I paid 300 for it and it went down to 150. I didn't buy more, which I should have. I did buy more Meta at 150, and now it's 300 something. But anyway, okay. One of the things, though, everyone's listening, they're going to go, well, obviously you let your profits run and you cut your losses short. I mean, but sometimes things go down and then they come back up. So how do you know when something's a true loser?
Yeah, so that can be difficult at times because we all talked about NVIDIA, but I don't know how many people remember 2022, NVIDIA was down like 65%.
Yeah.
So that's, I do, that's the part of it, right? The question though is when a stock is down, you have to ask why. Is it down because people weren't making microchips and people weren't using computers anymore? That wasn't the case. And that was the reason why I continued to hold. But if you take a stock like Peloton, where it was extremely popular during the pandemic and now no one talks about it anymore and no one, you know, they're losing money, bikes are breaking, you know, that says there's something wrong with that business. And when you start to see something wrong with a business or a company, that might be a true loser. When a company is fine and their sales are okay and their market is okay, but the stock market just doesn't like it at that particular point in time, then that could be something that you can continue holding long term.
I think that's exactly, yeah, I totally agree with what you said. What I used to tell people when I was a stockbroker was, and this is not easy to do, I don't really do this myself, but I'd like to think I would, is what you're doing is, here are the reasons I'm buying this stock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1, 2, 3. Okay. Now that stock goes down. Are those reasons still true? If they are, buy more. If they're not, sell.
Right.
So like Apple, for example, and this is another thing that I look at too. Apple has a moat. In other words, no one's going to touch them. I mean, not in my lifetime anyway, which may be before the end of the weekend, but I mean, Apple owns the smartphone market and smartphones are very popular. So as long as they're still dominating that field, I'm sticking with them. I actually have sold some because it became such a large part of my portfolio that I had to. But so what I try to find is a business that owns Coca-Cola. They own the market. They ain't mm-hmm. going anywhere, you know, and Apple and NVIDIA for that matter. I mean, a lot of people listening to this probably won't even know who NVIDIA is, but, you know, they own that market. You know, they own the server market, they own the gaming market, and now they own the AI market. So as long as they own their market and they have a moat around their castle, I'm an investor. And I try to, and you know, when I was a stockbroker, I would chase stupid tips, you know, because some other stockbroker might go, oh, you have to buy so-and-so, you know, because I know the company and they're going to, you know, it's a manipulated stock, blah, 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 and you lose your ass. But if you buy quality and companies with a moat around them and you hold on it for long periods of time, I will guarantee you that you will make money over time.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing where people make the mistake, and that's where I made my first stock market mistake, right? I bought Citi. I was, you know, 19, 20 years old, and after like 2 months, I didn't make money. I sold it. I didn't know that this was something you should be holding for years at the time.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes the difference where people will turn around, get impatient, and just sell because it was a bad month or it was a bad week. When in reality, true gains are made by holding year after year after year. And that's when you start to see those gains. And that's an easy way to weather some of those losses at times. Because if I've held for 2 years and I've gained over 2 years, it is rare not impossible, but rare, that one bad month or one bad year is going to tank my entire investment. But to get there, you have to be patient. And to get there, you have to sit down, ignore the news sometimes, and let those stocks work for themselves.
That's absolutely right. And I think, and actually, while we're on this topic too, let's talk about trading, because this is something that I've seen my whole life, you know, as a stockbroker with my clients and with my friends and with myself. You know, I'm going to day trade. Well, let me tell you something. That's the stupidest thing you could do. Go to Vegas, because at least they'll give you free drinks when you're losing your money. there is an inverse relationship. Here's a rule that I have. There's an inverse relationship between the amount of time you hold something and how successful you're going to be. In other words, what the market's going to do today is a flip of a coin. I have no way of knowing that. But I do know that over the last 100 years, the stock market's gone up an average of, well, depending on how you measure it, 9, 10% a year. So holding something for long, same thing with real estate, right? I mean, a lot of things, you can look brilliant if you hold on to them long enough. And you can look like an idiot if you try to trade them in a day.
Yeah, I totally agree. There was a presentation I sat through when I was an advisor myself a few years ago. And this image is burned into my memory now. So they put up a slide, it had three lines on it. And it said that, I forget what the time frame was. It was maybe like 70 or 80 years in the S&P 500. And they said that if you hold a stock for 5 years or more, the chances of that investment being positive was greater than 90%. If you hold it for 3 years or more, then the chances of that investments were like above 80%. And it had 1 year or less, and it was less than 50%. And that instantly told me the longer you hold, the odds are you're going to win. And there's a reason for that. But when you are reducing that where it's not even a year, you're talking about a day, a few hours, like you said, you're gambling at that point. You're not even in, you know, air conditioning and getting drinks for it, right? So like that's what makes it a lot riskier. Your margin for error is so incredibly small when you're trying to day trade. And that's because you have to know three things and get them right. That's what to buy, when to get in, and when to get out, all within a day, 5 days a week for 52 weeks, right? That's incredibly difficult to do. Whereas if you are investing for years at a time, you know, you could choose the right investment. But over time, that's one thing that you don't have to worry about, because odds are the entire stock market is going to rise over 1, 2, 3, 4 years and so on.
That's true. And you know, another thing that's worked for me too, it's really difficult to give this kind of advice because people are so short-term oriented, they can't really appreciate it. But what I try to do too, most of what I own now, I bought in 2009. Obviously there are exceptions like NVIDIA, but, and the reason why is because, okay, I was a stockbroker in 1981. I became a stockbroker and there was a recession in 1990. There was obviously, 1987, there was a stock market crash. I didn't buy when the market fell. In 1991, there was a banking crisis. I didn't buy because I was scared to death. I mean, Citibank was five, you know? And then in the Great Recession in 2009, I was like, I'm going to back the truck up, because everybody said the market's going to keep falling down. The sky is falling, henny penny, right? It took me three recessions to realize that when things go down and everybody in the world is convinced they're going to get worse, that's when you buy, because that's actually when wealth is created. Wealth is realized when you sell, but it's created when you buy when nobody else will. And so if anybody listening, if I give you one piece of advice, the market's high right now. It's high on a historical basis in terms of earnings. I wouldn't be a big buyer here, and I may be wrong. In fact, I have been wrong, because I bought some stocks this year in the market, you know, the NASDAQ's up, 30% this year. And I was not a big buyer because I thought the market was too expensive. I was wrong. But I'll tell you what, when the market gets really cheap, you got to buy then, and then just hold. You know, don't be afraid. Just hold. And that's the best way you're going to make money. That's my advice of 40 years of investing.
I tend to agree. The way I look at it is always be buying. So even though the market is up, I'm still buying. But when the market is down is when I get aggressive.
There you go.
That's when I say, look, you know, I could go out to eat today, or, you know, I'll get a fancy dinner, or I can, you know, get something cheaper and put this money in the market. So that's what I tend to do. And my first real opportunity for that was in 2020. Because the Great Recession, I didn't really have that much money. I was still in college. So that wasn't the biggest opportunity for me. But what I did in 2020 truly paid off, and I'm still holding the vast majority of those investments. I picked up O'Reilly's, which is up more than 75% for me.
Huge.
NVIDIA was one. I was up around 350 until I sold that third. But that's what I said back then. Like, the wealth that is going to be created in 2025 starts now, right? It started in 2020. And the wealth that's going to be created in 2023, you're really going to start to see that in 2027. And that's almost always been the case for those who are consistently buying and those who get very aggressive when the market is down.
So how do you decide to pull the trigger? This is the most important thing, and sometimes it's hard to articulate. But how do you know? What do you do? Okay, you hear NVIDIA might be good. And maybe I watch a lot of CNBC, not a lot, but I watch Fast Money and I watch Jim Cramer somewhat. So my point is, this is where I get a lot of input. I'm reading a lot of financial stuff, and so I hear about stocks like NVIDIA. You know, but what do you do after that? You've heard of something like NVIDIA. What makes you pull the trigger?
There are three things that I tend to look at. Let's say if I just heard about a stock on TV or something like that. The first thing that I like to do is see how well the stock has performed within the last 6 months and over the last year. That just gives me just context to see if things are going in the right direction or not. And the reason why I do that is because there have been several studies on what we call momentum. How a stock has done recently will tend to predict how it will do in the short term moving forward, but it's not a guarantee. For example, if NVIDIA is up 150%, I'm more likely to go that way than a Peloton that's down 95%. That's kind of very common sense. And that's going to tell me, should I continue researching, yes or no? If the answer is yes, then the next thing I try to look for is profits. I want to see, is this company actually making more money over time and is it expanding, or is it something that is falling off, or is it something that's negative? And that's usually not a good sign. So once I start to see those two things, I'm at a 90-95% yes. The last thing I tend to look at is what we call insider buying. I would love to see if the CEO or anybody on the board of directors, if they are buying current shares of the company, because they're going to always have more information than we have. You can usually Google this information. It comes up on what's called the SEC Form 4. And there's a Harvard research study that came out about 10 or 15 years ago that said that for insider buys, when you start to see those insiders buy, they outperform the stock market by 10%. So that is something that I look for. So how well did it do recently? Is the company making money? Is that money growing? And who is buying shares of the company that work there, like the CEO and those on the board of directors?
Excellent advice. And by the way, a little color I'll add there is that if somebody's selling, that means nothing.
Exactly.
Because they could be buying a yacht or putting their kids through college or any number of things. But there's only one reason you buy a stock, and that's because you think it's going higher. So if your insiders are buying, that's a good sign. What about you, Miranda? You got any tips? What do you use?
So, I mean, for me, mostly it just comes down to, I look at some of the things that that Kevin was talking about. But for me, it comes down to, do I think that I can hop on a trend, and do I think that this trend is going to be sustainable long enough for me to double my money? it's not very scientific, which is why I don't do a lot of individual stock investing. But for me, mostly it just comes down to, okay, I have some extra money that I can kind of experiment with. What seems like an interesting experiment, and what seems like I have a good chance of doubling my money with, based on that profitability, that momentum. And I'll look at things like, okay, what seems sustainable, and then what tends to look like it might have some staying power or value. And so it's really sad. You shouldn't use my process because it's very vibes, not really scientific, which is why I only use a small amount of my portfolio for this. Most of it continues to be dollar cost averaging into index funds, because ultimately I'm lazy and there's a lot of research to do it right.
There is. And to be honest, Miranda, I buy stuff by the seat of my pants sometimes too. I take flyers. I mean, I try not to do something stupid, but I'll just do what you do. I mean, I'll just get a feeling, because I've done this for a really long time. Not that I'm right. Again, I want to reiterate, I'm not right all the time, not by a long shot, But I'll look at things like price earnings ratios and things of that sort, especially the price earnings ratio relative to the historical price earnings ratio of that particular company. So in other words, a company could have a high, I don't know if any people listening will know what PE ratios are, but look it up if you don't. If a company has a high PE ratio, that may be okay, providing it's not high relative to its historical PE ratio. I missed Amazon for many years. I own it now, and I've tripled my money on it, but it took me years and years to buy it because it had no earnings. You know, and as Kevin was saying, you know, the first thing you want to do is make sure a company's making money, or they're just about to anyway. But Amazon wasn't forever. I mean, you know, it just started making money a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I was on the sidelines.
I made the same mistake.
Yeah, you did that too? I own it now. I can't remember what I paid for it. I bought it maybe 4 years ago, and I made money on it. But I wish I'd bought it 10 years ago. You know, I didn't.
Yeah.
But, you miss things sometimes, but that's okay.
Yeah, and that's something I've learned about investing in general is that, one, you know, your process is your process. However you evaluate, if it works, it works, and, you know, you're going to miss some, and that's fine. I'd rather miss out on good deals than take bad ones.
Yeah.
I think that's one way to look at it. But I think more importantly, you know, 10 years from now, you're going to wish you started 10 years ago. And I think that's the importance of just starting. Whether you still want to tend to mutual funds, which is totally fine, or you want to add a few more individual stocks, the key is starting because, again, just based on how the market works, you're going to be right if you are holding long enough, usually, you know, more often than not.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are two risks in buying a stock. One is bankruptcy, the other is the market. Bankruptcy risk you can eliminate by buying companies that won't go bankrupt, like Coca-Cola, for example. Market risk you can't control. So so eliminate the risk you can, bankruptcy, if possible. I mean, actually, obviously, as we know, almost anyone can go bankrupt. GM did. But generally speaking, big, giant companies are not going to go bankrupt. And then don't let market risk bother you. And one more thing I would add, too. When the market fell last year, I didn't really care. And the reason why is because I don't have so much money in the markets as making me lose sleep. I mean, I have a lot of money in the market, but I've done this for a really long time, and I know the market goes down. But if you find yourself sweating, you know, oh, God, you're checking, it's going down more, you're freaking out. You got too much money in the market. You know, so be careful. Don't put in more than you. I'm not going to say more you can afford to lose because that's stupid. But don't put in more that makes you lose sleep.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. What I do is, like I said earlier, like I really only check my investment account twice a year, and that's it. For some people, that's shocking, but that's the reason why. If I'm constantly staring at my account, then I'm going to make a mistake. That's just human nature. We are wired, and that's the issue with investing too, is that it goes against your nature, right? When you start to see danger, you want to react. As humans, we remember those terrible hurricanes, rainstorms, thunderstorms. You know, if I asked you what was the worst hurricane you've been through, you know exactly what that day was like. Most people don't remember those perfect days in between, and there are far more perfect weather days than there are bad days. But when you're looking at your account, you see that terrible drop when Netflix fell 13% in a day, and you react, that usually goes against what you should be doing, which is buying more or just sitting out. So to fight against that, I say, look, you know, June 15th, December 15th, that's what I'm looking. That's why I'm making those changes, and I'm not doing anything in between. And that's one way you can kind of get away from that reactionary place of thinking.
That is amazing to me that you only look twice a year, especially with stocks like NVIDIA. Not that you're wrong to do that, but I look at my portfolio. You know what I do, to be honest? I look at my portfolio several times a day when the market's up. And then when it's down, I don't look at it at all.
I had a tweet last year. It was around June when I was looking at my portfolio, because that was the year the stock market was down like 20%. At this time, it had to be down about 10%. It was my first time all year opening up my Roth IRA, and I was actually up like 12% or whatever it was. And it was kind of shocking. I'm like, oh, this is why I only check it, you know, twice a year, because had I not, if I checked it earlier in the year, I probably would have did something crazy and lost money like everybody else. But that's, you know, that's the way I manage it. You really got to manage those emotions and expectations.
Cool. Anybody have any stock recommendations as we close our podcast?
I mean, you know, index, guys.
You got to take a chance. Can't get a hit from the dugout. No, I don't know. As I said earlier, I'm not a big buyer of stocks right now because I think the market's overvalued. But I've thought that for months, you know, so I've obviously been wrong. If I was going to buy something today, I'd probably add to my Google. I have a bunch of that. Not a bunch, but, you know, enough. But I'd probably add to that. But I'm not real enthusiastic right now. How about you, Kevin?
Yeah, outside of buying index funds, which I want to reiterate, the majority of my money, the vast majority is there. I like Chipotle. Chipotle is not only a delicious place to eat, but it's also a very good stock. I think in the last year alone, it's up more than 60%.
Oh, yeah.
And when you start to look at what we call free cash flow, like the money they get in their hand, over the last 10 years has been double digits. So they're growing at a good, steady pace. It's one that I picked up maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago and one I intend on holding for a very long time.
Oh, really? I thought you were because it was lower last year. I thought I looked at it then. Wasn't it under 1,000 for a while?
I believe so. I had it on my phone a second ago. So it is.
Oh, right now it's well over
63%. So it's over $2,000 a share. Last February is about $1,500.
Yeah, I was thinking about buying it, but I wimped out. I didn't. And, you know, another thing, too, this is another thing I won't do is buy companies where I don't like the product, even though they're wildly successful. Example, McDonald's. I ain't buying it. It's been a great stock. I mean, it's been an awesome stock. But I don't like their product. I'm not going to buy it. And I'm not a huge fan of Chipotle either. But anyway, I lived in Tucson. I like genuine Mexican food. But anyway, I know we're running over. I could do this all day. This is my favorite topic, but I can't. We got to stop. We are out of time, folks. We are never out of topic. Dig a little deeper. You're going to find links to lots more info in our show notes. In fact, you can also find my entire stock portfolio in our show notes. You want to see what I own? And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That is MirandaMarquit.com, MARQUIT. And of course, you want to visit Kevin at his website. It's Building Bread, buildingbread.com. If you got a question, comment, or topic you'd like to suggest, we would love to hear from you. Email us at hello@moneytalksnews.com. And one last thing, I already said this at the break, but if you like what we do, please subscribe to our podcast. And that's all we got. Kevin, I really appreciate having you on again. You're a friend of the show. We love you. We hope to have you back soon.
Thank you.
I'm Stacy Johnson.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm Miranda Marquit.
Were you looking at the stocks or something?
I kind of was. I was kind of looking through a list.
So thanks for hanging out with us, folks. We're going to see you right here next time.